with Scott Allen.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this beautiful world. I am your host, Scott J. Allen, and this is Phronesis, Practical Wisdom for Leaders. Now, I am a professor of management at John Carroll University in Cleveland, Ohio, USA. In addition, I'm a husband and father of three teens. Now, this is a family endeavor. Will played the intro, Kate voiced the intro, and who knows, you may hear from Emily a little later. I'm also an author, entrepreneur, speaker, and co-founder of the Collegiate Leadership Competition. I love to travel, explore new places with family, and learn from others. Phronesis offers a smart, fast-paced discussion about all things leadership and followership, if we're honest. My guests are scholars and practitioners, and we cover relevant topics and incorporate practical tips designed to help you make a difference in how you lead and live. I am proud to share a few updates. According to Listen Notes, Phronesis is listed as among the top 3% of podcasts in the world because of you. So thank you. In addition, the podcast has two sponsors. First, Phronesis is the official podcast of the International Leadership Association, an association that is near and dear to my heart. ILA brings together leaders and those who teach, study, and develop leadership, advancing leadership knowledge and practice for a better world. Learn more at ila-net.org. My second sponsor is the Bowler College of Business at John Carroll University. At Bowler, we offer several advanced degrees and MBAs, and I'm confident that there's one that will fit your location, interests, and timeline. In fact, our online MBA is ranked as the number one in Ohio and number nine in the United States. We offer international study tours, a contemporary and forward-looking curriculum, and access to senior leaders and flagship organizations. Learn more at business.jcu.edu. You can find links to both sponsors in the show notes. Now, if you like what we're up to, please hit subscribe so you can stay current as we release new episodes each week. You can also share what we're up to with others, friends, colleagues, leaders, teams, students, and others you think will benefit. And now, today's show. Okay, everybody, welcome to the Phronesis podcast. Thank you so much for checking in. Today, we have Dr. Juana Bordas, and you know, she is the author of Salsa, Soul, and Spirit, Leadership for a Multicultural Age, and The Power of Latino Leadership. Both books received the International Latino Book Award and are breakthrough work in the multicultural leadership field. Her new edition of The Power of Latino Leadership, Ahora, was released in March 2023 and can be ordered on Amazon or at your local bookstore. Juana served as advisor to Harvard's Hispanic Journal, the Kellogg National Fellows, and as a trustee of the Greenleaf Center for Servant Leadership and the International Leadership Association. She was the first Latino to receive ILA's Lifetime Achievement Award and is a founder and executive director for Mi Casa Resource Center, founding president of the National Hispana Leadership Institute, and the Circle of Latina Leadership. She was commended by Latina Style magazine for creating a nation of Latina leaders. Juana was the first in her family to graduate from college. She then served in the Peace Corps in Chile and worked organizing production cooperatives in the barrios of Santiago. Today, this type of microenterprise work is recognized as foundational for assisting people achieve economic security. There's so much more, Juana. You had done work with the Center for Creative Leadership. I believe that's in the background as well, correct?
Yes.
And your family immigrated to the United States from Nicaragua.
Yes,
I did. Seven brothers and sisters.
Yes, I come from a tribe.
Seven.
I know people think that's strange, but you know, even in the 1920s, the average woman had 6 to 8 children. And I think many of us don't recognize how the fact that women don't have to have as many children, how that has not only empowered women, but given them choices. And of course, today with our planet, with so many people, we really don't want to have families of 8. But back in the old days, especially before the Industrial Revolution, big families and big tribes is how we got here. So I love my tribe and I'm happy to have been raised in a group. It kind of prepared me for leadership.
Well, I want to go there. I want to talk a little bit. When did you first kind of realize that you had this passion for the topic of leadership? I'd love to hear
that.
Well,
I was thinking about this the other day, you know, because one of the things about being older is having retrospection and thinking about things, you know. And so I was thinking about the fact that I'm kind of a bit of a know-it-all, you know, professors like you and me, we study, we have knowledge and, you know, And so I thought, where did that start? And so I am the youngest daughter in this family that immigrated. I'm 3 years old. Nobody that was older than me, all five of my brothers and sisters that are older than me speak with an accent. My parents didn't even know English. So I became the translator. So I did become the know-it-all. You know what I mean? I was the one, the bridge between my family's immigrant status and us coming to this country. And I'm very proud that my family poured themselves into me so I could become educated and really participate at the highest level. But I kind of, from a very young age, you know, was kind of a leader in my family, even though I was the youngest daughter. And it was because of that transition when we came here and I was 3 years old.
Wow. And then talk a little bit about the path that you took.
I think what's really important for me is that coming from an immigrant family, and I think people need to understand that there's been a Hispanic dysphoria, you know, even today, 33% of Latinos are immigrants, although we have to remember that over a third of the United States was Mexico. So we have these very old ancestral roots here as well. But when you look at my family's journey, when I came to this country, my parents, I mean, think about this. To give up your homeland, your family, your language, your community, and the respect people had for you back in your home, because we know how immigrants are treated here. And my mother had a fifth grade education and she washed dishes and scrubbed floors so I could get an education. When you come from that kind of background where your family really has that spirit of determination, which really built our country, this immigrant spirit, you are going to succeed, or I am going to succeed, because my parents gave up too much. In order for me to become an educated woman, you know, and there are two things where we came here for opportunity and education. And so my family now is very distinguished. You know, I'm an elder, but I've been able to see, like, I have a niece that's an architect, another niece that has her PhD and teaches at the University of Austin. I have a great nephew that has a PhD in nuclear physics. All three of my daughters have advanced degrees. We can do this. You know what I mean?
I love it.
Yeah. And I think the transformation, especially for immigrants and young people like me, is to realize that even though, you know, we don't have white privilege and we may not have had the right stuff, we come from greatness. We come from people that have determination and stamina and vision and want to leave a legacy. All the things that we teach in leadership, my parents had, but I didn't know that until I went through introspection and healing and really understanding my past. You know, because they say, if it didn't kill you, it's going to make you stronger.
I just came across a quote the other day, no pressure, no diamonds. Right. And so it's kind of really interesting. Right. Right.
Yeah. And I think this is a message, you know, because I want to talk a little bit about intergenerational leadership, because my new book has a whole chapter on that. And we can talk about that in a minute. But I think for young people, it's important for them to understand that life has its up and downs. It has its bumps, you know, and a lot's been written about how millennials have been kind of protected from that. I think part of it is people only have one or two children. So, you know, they pour a lot into their children. You know, but the fact is, you know, the first precept of Buddhism is life is suffering, or life is difficult. Mm. And that's how we grow, right?
Exactly.
We grow through those. And, you know, when they define leaders as lifelong learners, it means that every time we have an experience that isn't maybe going the way we want, we learn from it, we change, we adjust, we adapt, and then we become better leaders. So it's kind of a fail-safe attitude, but I think it's a great formula for life and for young people, because, you know, we're seeing so much anxiety around you know, young people today, to really understand that's kind of the fun of life too, you know?
What I'm really, really interested in kind of starting, because I want to get to intergenerational as well. What do listeners need to know kind of as a baseline from your perspective about Latino leadership? Are there differences? Are there nuances? What are some things
well,
that
you
listeners
know, I
should
really
know?
Work with 10 principles of leadership. And, you know, it's not like people in communities of color aren't doing what mainstream leaders do. Of course, there's kind of a template for leadership. So the first part is to prepare yourself. You know, even Robert Greenleaf in The Servant Leader said, we are called to leadership to heal ourselves.
Wow.
So, you know, and Peter Block talks in Stewardship about leadership being a path. And then, of course, James McGregor Burns, it's transformation. You're going to transform yourself if you're really a leader. So I think the first two principles of leadership is personalismo. Who are you as a person, to really do that kind of assessment? And it's even more important in the Latino community, because we're a people-centered culture. And who you are is more important than how much money you have or what family you came from. Who are you? You know, and so this personalismo. But one of the big differences is that for a person of color to become a leader, we have to deal with being marginalized, being minorities, having gone through, like me, thinking that I wasn't smart. I didn't think I was smart till I got to graduate school. And so what happens is that we have to go through this process. I can remember being discriminated against as a child. I can remember feeling like I wasn't as good as. And that's why I say this transformation is to really look at yourself. But for people in communities of color, we have to deal with the psychology of oppression, it's called. What happened to us because we were marginalized? White leaders don't need to do that. But they do need to look at white privilege and how that has affected their path so that they can understand some of the obstacles so that we can build a real intergenerational, multicultural leadership core that reflects the diversity of our country.
I love that. So we can build. I love that.
Yeah. So the first three principles are really about preparing yourself for leadership. And like I say, we all know we have to do that. But there's a little bit of a difference in when you come from a collective culture, when you come from a marginalized culture. And really, there's a lot of strength in that, like I said, you know, when you process that. And then the other thing about Latino leadership is it comes out of our culture, it comes out of our history, it comes out of our experience, just like the African-American experience has given them kind of a very civil rights activist form of leadership. Well, our leadership also comes out of that tradition, you know, because we are communities of color, but there's also the culture. And so Latinos are not a race, we're an ethnic group. And so what really brings us together is our culture. Mm. And let me give you an example how that affects leadership. So I say the golden rule of Latinos is mi casa, su casa. Everybody knows that. And it's not only about generosity, but it really means what I have is yours. You know, Latinos, when they go to somebody's house, is like first thing you do is feed them. And if you really know them well, you go to the fridge and find out what's there. It's this idea that people support and share what they have. Well, if you look at that sense of generosity as opposed to materialism or acquiring things, sharing, you know, and making sure everybody has enough. In the Latino community, you don't take more than your share because then the collective is damaged and other people don't have enough. So think about a leader who's generous. Think about a leader who cares about other people, who shares their time, who helps develop people. Think about a leader that really understands that by all of us working together, having that shared reciprocity is how we build, you know, powerful organizations. You know, my definition of leadership is that the purpose of leadership is to build a society that cares for its people.
Wow.
And when you look at communities of color, our leadership is what has sustained us. Now for Latinos, it's 530 years. The same thing with African-American communities or our indigenous American Indian communities. We have been sustained for all these years because of our generosity, our ability to work together, our ability to listen to one another and to include everyone. You know, Latinos, the second rule of Latinos is bienvenido. It's an inclusive culture. It welcomes other people to join with us. That's very different than exclusion.
Yes.
So when you start preparing for leadership, you know, understanding the culture that you come from is so important because I call it the Latino advantage. That's our gifts we're going to give the mainstream.
It resonates with that model of servant leadership, right? That is a very other.
Oh, absolutely. So I'm glad you brought that up because I redefine that for us as community stewardship, which Greenleaf talked about community. But when you look at collective cultures, and that's one of the huge distinctions between the dominant culture and cultures and communities of color and also women's leadership.
Yes.
It's really about the we, not the I.
Yes.
And so when you look at that as one of the fascinating points of leadership, of servant leadership for Latinos is we have to serve our community. Hmm. We have to advance our community. Leadership is not about me. It's about the we. So collective, I call it community stewardship, but it's about collective reciprocal leadership. And for Latinos, I framed it called leadership by the many.
Okay.
Because our leadership and the leadership in communities of color is critical mass theory leadership. We need to get enough people engaged and involved and sharing our histories and our cultures and what we have to offer and expanding what leadership is. And that's part of what we do. So as we do that, we create leadership by the many. That means all of us have to engage in our civic life. All of us have to participate in our organizations. All of us have to make our universities strong. And so it's a different kind of leadership. And it also entails a lot of responsibility, which I'm not sure a lot of times dominant culture leaders think of leadership as their responsibility to uplift their people. I mean, it's a great honor to be a leader. And what's our purpose? To uplift people. The purpose of leadership is to create a society that takes care of its people.
Yeah.
And I do have to say this, Scott, when my first book came out, you know, and my publisher told me it was going to be listed under business. Now, I had already said in the book that corporations had hijacked leadership. Hijacked it. Leadership isn't, I mean, yes, we have to have good organizations and yes, we have to have a good economy. But beyond that, you know, as James McGregor Burns and Greenleaf and the people that laid the foundation for modern leadership said, it's got to encompass a good society. That's what Greenleaf called it, the compassionate good society. And so we have to have that vision. I know you work a lot with vision. We have to have that vision of where we're going together.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that whole idea of leadership by the many. And the paradoxical thing is that you build that by another leadership principle that I have called the leader is equal. You know, and so in many communities of color, again, back to our collective web that keeps us together, you know, I say I want my life to be an example, not an exception. And that whole idea of me treating every single person with respect, understanding that everyone has a contribution to make, whether it's keeping the place clean so we can work or fixing our IT or making sure we have a budget and get paid or making sure we have the right outreach so people know about our services. All of this works together in order to, you know, to create a leadership field that everybody can prosper and grow in. And so the leader is equal. You know, I have a couple examples. One of my friends that I interviewed for my book is Mayor Frederico Pena from Denver. And he was a great mayor. He built the convention center, the airport, got the Rockies here. We expanded the airport. We passed more bond issues under his leadership than any city had in previously. And he said that today, even though he was mayor many decades ago, if he walks into the city and county building, people will say, because you knew my name, because you recognized me, because you included all of us, I became a leader, or I knew I could do the best job possible. So when you do that with people, and that's what leaders do, they recognize your potential. They see something in you. They help you, you know, grow and develop. And so by having the leader is equal, and that you create leadership by the many.
Well, and I loved that phrasing also in there of that visual of kind of the collective web, right? It's that collective web.
Well, Native Americans explained it to me like this. They said, you know, if you take one of the beautiful baskets made by even the Tarahumaras in Mexico or the American Indians here, you take that beautiful basket and each strand has to be strong and held together so that basket can hold even water. I mean, it'll hold things. It's a container. It's the community. It's not that we don't want every single one of you to be as strong and as powerful as you can be. We need that in the tribe. We need that in the community. We need that in our country.
Yeah.
But in service to the collective, weaving together, what is it we need to do? And how do I put my gifts at service? Because each one of us is unique. By the way, well, one of the chapters in the book is about destino, which Latinos believe in, destiny, that we, like me being the youngest child, me going to Chile at a time when there was no Hispanic identity or community, and then coming back, understanding who my culture and my people were.
Wow.
That in 1966, that was very rare.
Yes.
And so my life has shaped my leadership just like your life has. So we believe we're on a path, and that life is not, you know, I'm the captain of my own ship. The ship is on a sea, and life is a dance. It brings me stuff. I accept it. When I was given the opportunity to get a graduate degree, it was really almost given to me because I went to get a job at the social services department at the University of Wisconsin. And they said, well, we don't hire people unless they have a master's in social work. And by the time I got through, they were offering me a stipend to go to the University of Wisconsin to get my master's degree and come back and work for them. Your destino will lead you to where you need to be. And I call it a destino backpack. Look and see what your assets are, you know, where you were born, what place in the family, what your skills are, you know, what experiences have you had, because you're on a path, you're on a journey. And by retrospecting and looking at your destino or your destiny, you'll understand your personal purpose, and then you can be even more of a leader.
Wow. Wow. Any other foundational before we move into some of the multi-generational?
Like the African-Americans have the civil rights. We have a thing called Si Se Puede. A lot of people have heard that. Yes, we can. And what's important there is the we. Yes, we can. And so Latino leadership is an activist form of leadership. And so when I interviewed young people for my book, I interviewed young activists, digital activists, you know, who are now very involved in the Latino community, doing things like DACA, you know, the deferred students that are now able to stay in the United States. Young people did that, involved in climate change, involved in, but you know, that this new generation has a real social agenda, and they should, because of all the issues that they're facing, from climate change to debt to not being able to buy a home, even longevity. Young people will not live as long as our generation today because of health concerns and because of the environment. So there is a new generation of activists, and that's the tradition of people of color.
Well, and I think it's so interesting to think about that from a perspective of even just, I'm most familiar with, say, like the civil rights, and you have an individual like Martin Luther King Jr., and then you have an individual like Malcolm X, and two very different styles or Fred Shuttlesworth. We could add Fred Shuttlesworth into this, where there's going to be more of like an assertive and an aggressive, like, we're tired, this needs to stop, and kind of pushing. Or we could say Larry Kramer in the LGBTQ community during the AIDS epidemic with Reagan and Fauci, right? I mean,
or you could step back to the women's movement. I mean,
yes,
it's really important to understand change as well, you know, because
yes,
the women got the vote 100 years ago, and it's taken us 100 years to get where we are today. Yep. But it, you know, you have to remember that women chained themselves to fences in front of the White House and were force fed and marched, and they couldn't even vote to get the vote, is the interesting part, you know, because they didn't have the vote. But if you look back at the women's movement, it was a very activist movement. And when I was involved as an early feminist, very activist movement with a woman's agenda of education and health and the well-being of people. And so I think there is a model there that we need to reignite. I think there are young people that are ready to do that. And while I'm here, I think it's the role of the elder, and I'm one of the elders now, to really work hand in hand with our young people, to give them perspective and to give them support and to let them know, you know, I entered the University of Florida when it was segregated. Mm-hmm. I had to march to integrate my university. Two Blacks came on my senior year. I didn't meet another Hispanic. And yet about 8 years ago, I went and spoke to the incoming freshman Latino class, and it was 1,500. And the school has become a Hispanic serving organization. And it's, you know, so we look at all our universities, they're changing. So again, I can offer perspective to young people. Yes, it's hard right now. For example, what's happening in Florida, it's very hard right now. But I grew up in Florida, and it was a totally segregated state. We can do this.
Well, okay, so talk a little bit about, because the multi-generational component, because I think you're kind of going there, at least in spirit right now, of, look, we have many, many generations of individuals who can continue to influence change, right? Influence change.
Yeah, well, I think one thing that as a community organizer and an activist, in about 7 years, the majority of the electorate will be millennials or younger.
Yes.
We have an incredible shift going on right now. I just gave I went to the Colorado Health Foundation. There were three people with white hair like me there. And I gave a presentation to Johnson & Johnson, and I was having people stand up based on their generation to talk a little bit, because each generation also brings different gifts and perspectives. And there was only one other boomer besides me. So this is happening fast. You know, 10,000 boomers retire every day, and I'm encouraging them. All the studies say, stay involved if you want to stay healthy, active, and relevant.
Yes.
You know, because, you know, you don't have to work full time, and millennials and Zs are redefining how we look at work. You know, they say we lived to work, and they want to, we work to live, and they want to live to work. Girl, what it is, it's just that they want to work, but they want to enjoy their lives.
Yes.
And they saw their parents working too hard, so they don't want that. But in any case, older people today have to really stay engaged. I don't believe in retirement. In Spanish, the word retirement is jubilar, and jubilar means to get younger.
Oh, wow. Really?
Well, a Holman is a young person, and Holy Lag, it's the same root, young and retiring. Well, you know, people call it your second childhood, but I really, you know, am encouraging my generation to stay engaged. You know, a lot of this happened on our watch, and we have a responsibility. And like I say, when you look at American Indian leadership, African-American leadership, Latino leadership, and even early women's leadership, it's about responsibility.
So well said. So well said. Well, and we talked even before we got on the air that maybe next summer, or actually not next summer, but next year at the ILA conference in Chicago, where we can honor some of those elders and have an experience where people can interact and communicate and learn, right? Because I think that intergenerational learning and understanding and empathizing is critical. It's a part of
young people keep us young.
Yes.
In other words, people say to me, how are you so young? Well, that's because I really do hang out with and teach and work with, and so do you. It's such a great path to be able to have that interchange. And one thing I was going to say was that when I work with young people, you know, they have such a broad perspective. My millennial daughter has been on a computer since she was three. That didn't happen to me. I hate to tell you guys this, but I was in my late 40s or 50s. I had a secretary who was doing my, we don't even have that anymore, but you know, she was on the computer. So what I wanted to say was, you know, not only are they digital activists, let me give you an example. When I interviewed Christine Jimenez, one of the co-chairs of United We Dream, who is the DACA organization, she said that during their marches and so forth, they had 5 million people online.
Wow.
Well, that's unheard of as a community organizer, or back in the day when you talked about Martin Luther King or Cesar Chavez trying to organize people, we didn't have access to media like they do.
Yeah.
And so they can organize not only national days of gun violence prevention, like our young congressman Maxwell Frost did, you know, but they can do it fairly quickly and do it not only across the country, but also international, some of the climate marches. And so they have this digital activism. They also have a thing called intersectionality, you know, where they really are and also looking at the system as dominance and exclusion as being the problem, whether you're talking about racism or sexism or LGBTQ issues or climate change. It has to do with some people being in charge and other people not participating. And so young people want to see the end of dominance and want to see hierarchy flattened. And so one of the ways I do that is, and you're going to laugh at this, is I have my students call me Tia Juana, which means Aunt Juana, you know, and all of our cultures have had aunties and people that, you know, we relate to as aunties or uncles, but they're not really related to us. And what it does is it lowers, it changes the hierarchy.
Yes.
Because I'm their auntie that they can talk to. You know, you've always had a favorite aunt that you could hang with that was not as judgmental as your parents, that listened to you and that really you exchanged with. So they call me Tia Juana, you know, and I'm on TikTok and I try to really listen to them about how is it that we can relate together? Because I think older people really need to respect the fact that young people today are first of all, a lot smarter than we were at their age. They say to me, I want to be like you when I'm old. And I go, oh no, you're way ahead of me. I'm talking to you, you're 30 and look where you are. And it's true, you know, hopefully we're evolving and they are so much smarter. Like I said, my daughter was on a computer at 3 years old. Their perspective of the world, their ability to connect, their ability to bring disparate things together is so much huger than ours. And they've been global. So they're a global community and a digital community. They value gender fluidity. But a lot of that gender and you can see it in the tattoos, by the way, which my daughters have started a fund so I can get a tattoo. So I can really be part of the group, you know. So they really value individuality at the same time that they have such a collective sense. And, you know, they call each other friends. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Even when you're talking to them, you know, they have this idea of friendship or connection that we didn't have in our generation, you know? Mm. And so I learned so much from the young people and they keep me so vibrant as far as, yes, we can do this. You know, we have to have hope. You know, without hope, you cannot, you have to have that vision. You know, even Peter Senge said leadership is the reality, the vision, the space in between. That's what you're doing, bringing that the reality today more into the vision that you want to have in the future.
Yes.
And so really working with young people around their vision for the future is so important for elders to do and to support them as we go through this transition of demographics in our country today.
Well, I think the key word, and it's kind of been a theme of our conversation so far, is that we, right? How do we, give us your definition of leadership again, so listeners are reminded.
The purpose of leadership is to create a society that takes care of its people.
Okay. Okay. How do we better take care of our people? How do we elevate all? And how do we create spaces for dialogue to better understand some of those differences and connect as humans, right?
Yes.
And try to make it better. Try to leave it better than
and
we
also,
thought.
You know, when I say that Latinos have a bienvenido spirit, inclusiveness, I really mean that. I mean, Latinos, because we're an ethnic group, you know, 25% of us are Afro-Latinos, another 25% are indigenous. Over 30% of us identify as multicultural or as coming from more than one culture. And then we agree, 40% of us agree that we have European backgrounds. So we're all the cultures and we welcome people to join with us. So one of the things I write about is that Latinos are the prototype for the multicultural age that's coming. Wow. You know, 1,000% of white people changed their identity on the last census to be more than one race. You know, everyone's looking for their identity. Who are we in this global context, in this global world? And we've had so much migration and integration and immigration. You know, we're pretty mixed.
Yes.
And so how do we develop that respect for people from different communities and really begin to build this multicultural society? A majority of kids under 18 already identify as multicultural. It's already here. You know, you can see it in your classrooms. You can see it. And so how do we build this new society that's both humanistic, in other words, people-centered, and respects people for who they are, that intersectionality, that individuality, and yet at the same time, we want to work together.
We will pause there for this conversation. That's a wonderful, wonderful way to sum up what we've just discussed. And so, you know, as we begin to wind down our time, I always ask guests what you've been reading, what you've been streaming, listening to, watching. What's caught your attention recently? What's been on your radar that maybe listeners might be interested in? What do you think?
You mean other than Barbie?
After all of that, you go to Barbie. Although I have not seen it, my daughter saw it.
Well, I mean, it did shake everybody up, didn't it?
Yeah, I heard it had a good heart to it, is what I heard. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I do think that we're in a new stage of feminism today, and it's okay for women to be beautiful as well as powerful and strategic and leaders. And you know, so anyway, yeah, I have been reading a lot about this intergenerational change that's coming. Because I think it's so critical to figure out that, you know, when I was young, John F. Kennedy got up and said, let the word go forth from this time and space, that the torch has been passed to a new generation of leaders. And here come the boomers, right? So we're at that same juncture today. So I spend a lot of time really reading about and trying to figure out how you build this intergenerational core of people.
Yep.
Within that, because I am an elder, I've been reading a lot about how to sustain and what is it that makes people my age keep on keeping on. You know, I don't want to, I mean, I've told people, you know, I want to be useful and working and helping and sharing and learning until I, you know, until I leave the planet.
Yes. Well, yeah. And
which is,
purpose?
You know, according to statistics, that ain't that long.
Well, you will buck that system.
So I love to read about that. And then this might be an interesting read for people. You know, I've been thinking a lot about why Latinos, even though we're going to be 78% of the new entries into the workforce, right?
Wow.
Even though we're the fastest growing group, even though 60% of us are millennials or younger, there's a Latino wave coming. Bad Bunny's the best example of that, by the way.
Yeah.
Here's a young singer from Puerto Rico who refuses to sing in Spanish and becomes the number one pop star in the world and gets downloaded on more than any other artist for 3 years in a row because he stood his ground, because he said, be who you are. That's what he says. He says, I'm not going to do anything else for you to like me. I'm going to be me. And so that sense of self. So I've been reading a lot about and thinking about this Latino wave and how can we get people to really understand the conflict that Latinos went through. Now, we're very polite people and we're generous and courteous. And so we don't have that same style where we're in your face. But, you know, I don't know if people recognize that during the U.S.-Mexican War, the U.S. marched into Mexico City and put its flag up in Mexico City. I mean, we had a real war. And the reason the war started was because Mexico and Spain had outlawed slavery. The settlers in Texas wanted to bring their slaves in. That was the emphasis for the war. So we were defending the Black people when we had this war. So I don't think people know enough about the history of Latinos in this country, even though this is our ancestral lands. And we're connected to 26 countries. And we're the dominant force in this hemisphere. And we invite everybody to join with us. It's a whole different paradigm of diversity and inclusion. And so
I love that last part. And we invite everyone to join us.
That's right. You know, let's get with the program. Because that's who we are. You know, 26 countries, immigrants, all the different races, you know, let's, you know, and oh, by the way, one of my principles of leadership is gozar la vida, enjoy life. The other things that the Latinos are bringing is celebration, salsa, music. You know, we spend more money going out to eat, going to movies. We want to enjoy our lives, even though we're the hardest working people in America. So I've been reading about how do I get this message across in a way that people that are non-Latino will really understand that we're here to build, you know, I call it Latino destino. I'm here to build the humanistic multicultural society.
Wow. Well, okay, for listeners, The Power of Latino Leadership, Ahora. And it is in your bookstore. It's on Amazon. I'm going to put a link in the show notes so that you can access Juana's work. Such a fun conversation. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate your perspective. I appreciate just the energy and enthusiasm. Listeners, I wish you could have seen Juana in this conversation because she was moving around and she was using her hands and it was awesome because as you can tell, she's incredibly passionate about this topic. That is contagious. That is contagious.
What a pleasure to see you grow and to know you for decades. That's one of the other advantages of age is to be able to see young people like you, which I've known for so long.
Yes.
Become the powerful and engaging and actually loving leader.
Well, thank you so much, Juana. We'll have you back. We'll have another conversation. Thank you so very much. We appreciate your work.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. In case you couldn't tell, Juana has incredible passion for her work. Just incredible passion for her work. And it's contagious. In the literature, it's called emotional contagion. If you're passionate, if you're excited, if you're enthusiastic about the work that you're doing, it's likely that others will be as well. And so for me, that's kind of the practical wisdom in this episode. What is that emotional tone that you are setting? Jonathan Reams always says, leaders create the weather. So what weather patterns are you creating in your context? Is it one of curiosity and passion and enthusiasm for the work? Or is it something else? So to Juana, thank you so much. I learned a great deal in that conversation. I always love spending time with you. Appreciate your work. And for listeners, as always, thank you so much for checking in. You have just finished another episode of Practical Wisdom for Leaders with Scott Allen. To contact me, visit www.scottjallen.net or send me a note at scott@scottjallen.net. I can also be found on Twitter and LinkedIn, so let's connect. Now, if you have feedback, I'd love to hear it. And as always, thank you so much for listening. One final nod to our sponsors, the International Leadership Association and the Bowler College of Business at John Carroll University. And now, here's Kate's twin sister, Emily, with the outro.
You've been listening to Phronesis, Practical Wisdom with Scott Allen.